Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And this Major League Baseball player, I remember when I was a Yankee fan, and I'm a Pittsburgh guy, but I was a Yankee fan when the Yankees were, I guess, a team that wasn't so hated before they won all their World Series. I was training to be a professional wrestler in Bricktown, New Jersey, and I lived in Jersey for the summer, and I was listening to the baseball team saying, wow, are the Yankees are coming back? And this guy, Jim Leyritz, he's a player. So that's my story about you, Jim. So I want to welcome the program, two-time World Series champion, Jim Leyritz. Jim, how are you? And that's my story of living in Bricktown, outside Bricktown, New Jersey, listening to you every night playing for the Yankees.
That's a great story. Yeah. Now, thank you for having me. We had some pretty good years here in New York, and there were some thin times when I first came up, but to finally turn it around in '96 and get that team on a roll as far as World Series after World Series and this upset dynasty was pretty special.
Yeah, and it's amazing when you talk about how you guys started that run. And, you know, you were kind of a bottom feeder and then started winning and really got New York energized by your winning. Because the Mets kind of always took a little bit of more of a love at certain times before the Yankees tradition before. So to bring that Yankees tradition back, I consider you one of those people that brought it back for sure, especially in the start.
Well, yeah, you know, again, in 1990, we had just started building from within again. And Gene Michael and Buck Showalter did a great job of giving us young guys who had been down in the farm system for a long time an opportunity. And I was the first one to come up in 90, got off to a pretty good start. Then they brought up Kevin Moss, and slowly everybody started playing better and better. And, you know, then Bernie Williams came along. There's Sterling Hitchcock, Andy Pettit, and everything turned out to be pretty good. And again, we turned the organization losing into a championship team.
Yeah, you kind of the way you built the Yankees, and people wouldn't think this, is through the minor leagues in a lot of ways, Jim, just like the Pirates have built their team right now to their winning ways for sure. So it's amazing. I would never have thought I'd be talking about the Pirates and winning. Well, now I'm used to it for 2 years, so I'm pretty excited. So now, Jim, what you're able to do, and we talked off air and then I visited your website, is you're involved in a lot of great charity work. And I guess paying it forward is an important thing to you, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things, when I spent 3 years going through trial and everything else, but I wasn't able to participate in some of these charities and some of these events, it was probably the most painful thing because of all the things that I'd been doing before then. As a player, you know, I was really involved in ALS here in New York, of course, with Lou Gehrig. And then in 2008, my brother-in-law was diagnosed with the same disease. And unfortunately, we lost him in 2010. So I do a lot of stuff with ALS, because it was something that affected my family directly. I also do a lot of stuff with the 9/11 Foundation, which is the Board of Education that we are keeping fighting to get one of these days the 9/11 attacks as part of American history and, you know, possibly a national holiday because of the effect that had on the world. And right now, they're not allowing it in history books. They're not allowing it to be, you know, be recognized. And that's something that we're really fighting for as part of the Board of Education to really get that out there. And what we do is we go into the schools and we teach the kids that, you know, maybe don't know about it, what happened that day and why that day was so important in American history.
Jim, and as an educator myself, when I was first being trained as an educator, I remember the 9/11 attacks. I was in Pittsburgh in a training and saw this and really got to speak to Jody Messina a couple weeks ago on September 11th, and she talked about how the day and remembering that day, and I believe it should be in the history books because a lot of our kids are forgetting about it, Jim, and they're forgetting, they don't remember September 11th, and I definitely believe it should be a national holiday in the history books. And what do you think the reasons are, Jim, from, you know, talking that it's not happening yet?
Well, I don't think it's been recognized enough as how it changed the world, how you know, we talk about situations that affect maybe a community or city, you know, like the Boston Marathon. But the Boston Marathon bombings are very much similar to 9/11, when 9/11 started, whereas the terrorists were able to feel like now they can infiltrate the United States. That all is a direct correlation for what happened in 9/11. And to me, again, it was such an impact on the universe that this is not a New York thing. A lot of people in the beginning said, oh, it's a New York thing. You know, it happened in New York. But really, this is the epicenter of the United States. And it's where things really get generated out of. And that event on 9/11 really transformed everything in our society, everything in our world. And it's just, for us, that those of us that are part of the board, we just truly believe that it has to be recognized. Because 13 years later, like you just said, a lot of young people, our next generation, don't know. You know, we did a survey with some of the colleges, and about 42%, 62% of the kids had no idea what 9/11 was. And that's when we knew that we had to take some action to be able to get this into the kids that are younger and in the school days.
Well, whatever way I can help promote it, Jim, reach out to me anytime to promote that, the organization and stuff, and we'll definitely get the website at the end of this, because you're doing so much other charity work as well, as I saw, working also with, because of the Nuketown massacre. And what are you doing to help the people in Newtown?
Yeah, we've just started. This is the beginning of that, working with them. One of the women that were killed, one of the teachers, the last name is Soto. They have started a charity and foundation, and it's something that over the next couple of years we hope to, you know, develop and to give them support, because they were hit pretty hard, you know, by that tragedy. And, you know, just one of the things for me, you know, just to be able, like you said, to be able to give back, be able to use my name, be able to use, you know, the New York experience that I had here to be able to help people. And just reach out to whoever we can help.
Well, I think that definitely we have to not forget Newtown as well. I mean, to think about those little children being killed.
Yeah.
And I remember a massacre like that for a school shooting, where truly you wanted to hold my children. I have five kids myself, Jim, and say, you know, hold them tight and say, wow, my wife's a school teacher. And to say, what if that was, and they went into my school, my wife's school. And that changed things as well. My kids were talking about, yes, today, about lockdown. And I'm like, what has happened? And this is a Catholic school, Jim, in a very affluent area. But we all have to remember that these things can happen anywhere, and any way we can help make our children more safe in the schools is very important to me, for sure.
No, I agree 100%. 100%.
And then another thing you're involved in is Legends and Valor. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's one of the Wounded Warriors, and it's a division of the Wounded Warriors, which is another strong charity that I'm slowly getting really involved in. About 3 years ago, they had an event down in San Diego. I got a chance to spend some time with some of those guys that had come back from the war and were struggling to get back into society and how to be able to get back to just normal life. And to hear their stories, to hear what they talked about, I never realized, number one, the amount of help that they don't receive, and then some of the things that they go through. That, you know what, this is something, another project or, you know, thing that we can do, that we can really help our veterans who have given up so much for us to make their lives or their transition back into society a little bit easier. So very important foundation.
Oh, the definitely, and all those different areas, and I see, as busy as you're talking about different things you're involved in and things like that, you just say, I have to help these organizations out, and my name will help in that process of getting donations, especially when these are very tough times for people to donate. And if they know a great organization is being, you're helping in that process of raising money, I think it's fantastic as well. So what's going on also with Jim Leyritz? Also, you talk about the charity work. Any other projects going on with you currently?
Well, really, actually, I'm just getting ready to restart my career with TV and radio. I took a hiatus for the last couple of years after going through trial and left the trial was over with. It was a very difficult time for my children as well as everybody. And I spent 3 years, the last 3 years, taking them out to California to get away from everything, get them settled so they can kind of, you know, get back to normal life. And now that I've done that, now they're settled. I have a fiance that I'm getting ready to get married to. And, you know, now I'll be able to get back to work and be able to take care of the family again financially. And I'm looking forward to that. I've got an opportunity possibly with the San Diego Padres and then also possibly here in New York and other places. So hopefully by January I'll have all that figured out.
How much do you like being involved in the game of baseball? Is that something that you enjoy a lot, being involved with the organizations and stuff being part of it?
And I think that, you know, will always be with me. I mean, there's two things I know how to do, that I know how to coach baseball and I know how to talk about it. So I'm hoping that, you know, for the next 15, 20 years that I'll still be around the game, still be part of it, and still be able to, you know, give my knowledge and give my expertise, whether it be as a coach, whether it be as a TV radio personality, and have people enjoy it.
And it's kind of like another start for you, and I could see, I can listen to you and your voice. You're excited about that new start in life, and everyone needs that second chance, as we're seeing with all the crazy things going on in athletics and all that, that it happens, and it's time to move forward and do great things, Jim. So where can we find information on you, learn more about you, and also you're an author as well, so we can purchase your book and learn more about you. Where can we go?
Yeah, I wrote a book called Catching Heat. You can get that through my website, which is jimlayris.com. I also have a Twitter, which is The Real Jim Layris, at The Real Jim Layris. And, other than that, I do that through my website. You'll have my email. You'll have to be able to get in contact with me. And my website is actually my Facebook is James J. Layris. And you're able to get in touch with me through that also.
Well, Jim, I'm glad we connected via LinkedIn and I got to talk to you, and you're doing some tremendous things, so our international audience knows what you're doing and helping. So quickly, 1 second, so the website's for the 9/11, where can we find information on that? What website?
The 9/11 Board of Education.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. And all of the different charities are connected at your website. People got to go to it. It's a very nice looking website. And it was great reminiscing. Got to reach out to you again to break down some stuff with baseball down the line. Or if you have any other charity work you want to promote, an event or something, please feel free to reach out to me, Jim. But thanks again for calling.
No, thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Thank
you. Take care, Jim. All right. See you later.
All right.
Okay. Bye.
All right.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And anytime I get to interview the basketball players, and what I try to do is when the offseason's here, which is a very short offseason, even the former players, I grab them now. So we've really hit with some really interesting big-time college players, big-time NBA players as well, but again, we only think of a few, especially at different times. But when I look at this guy's resume, it is phenomenal. And when I think of this guest, I think of UCLA basketball first. Well, he's, again, a Pac-10 all-conference player, also All-American, but let's continue with the list of specific things of his success. He was an NBA champion, but I think of him as a UCLA Bruin, so I want to welcome the program, Tracy Murray. Tracy, how are you? And Tracy, I was seeing that you're back with your alma mater, being involved with them in certain ways. Thanks again for calling.
Thanks for having me on. It's truly an honor. Thank you.
Oh, I love hearing that for sure. And I think a lot of times you guys want to get back talking about things, especially when, you know, you do so many different things, but just to talk about you as a player and your career in so many ways. And what a successful career. Looking back when you were a child, did you think you were going to be that big of a star in basketball?
Well, you always dreamed of being reaching your goals or your dreams or dream of doing something great and something that you really like, and that you like basketball. To me, I kind of worshiped the game as a kid, and I didn't want to do anything else. So to be able to go to the school that I dreamed of playing at and to be able to play for as long as I did in the NBA, in which I dreamed of playing in as a youngster. It was truly a fairy tale. Of course, there are ups and downs and things that you don't expect. That's just life. But, you know, to accomplish that goal and to play for such a long time was truly a blessing.
And I'm glad that you definitely look at that. A lot of professional athletes get a bad rap, and they learn through that process of given that God-given talent, Tracy, that, you know, it's time you want to pay it forward in so many ways. And we get a few rotten apples in sports that ruin it for all of you, especially that really see as that you are role models, that you want to make a difference in the community and all these things, and then a couple guys ruin it for everyone in some ways and as a professional athlete.
Well, I think 90% of the guys in every sport or entertainment for that matter are good people. They give back, they pay it forward. They're doing things to uplift, help kids, help the educational system if they can. They put their heart and their desire into making this a better place. You're right. The 10% that seems to be focused on, it kind of ruins a lot of stuff for what so many other people that are doing very good, because the media chooses to focus on the negative
instead of the positive.
But,
yeah.
Right. But there are tons of guys that are out there doing phenomenal stuff, Make-A-Wish projects. They're doing, you know, I did that a few times. And I tell you, that Make-A-Wish Foundation is something truly special. You know, these are kids that are dying, and their last wish is to hang out with you. I mean, John Cena is excellent. Him and Hulk Hogan are guys that I admire, because they get the call a lot, and they go above and beyond the duty to make sure these kids have a phenomenal day, time, whatever time they spend with them. And, you know, it's truly an honor to be in that situation and to be with a kid that wants to be with you. His last wish is to be with you. And I tell you, it's, when I did my Make-A-Wish, it was somebody else's Make-A-Wish, and they kind of skipped out on it. I'm not going to name the person because, you know, his karma's already been dealing with him. But our shoe company, Fila, at the time called two of us players to fill in, and it was me and Tyrone Corbin. They flew Tyrone Corbin up from Atlanta, and they flew me in from L.A., and we were going to New Jersey. This kid, you know, he wasn't doing well in his – so they gave him two players for the price of one, more or less. And we played with him. We played games. We took pictures. We signed autographs. We did whatever he wanted to do for that day. And I tell you, on the way out there, I didn't know what to expect. Right. You know, it's a thousand things going through my head. Once we got there and started doing it, and from the time that it was done to the time I got back on the plane, because it was a turnaround, I literally, probably for the first 30 minutes of the flight, tears were just streaming down my face, because it was such a deep situation, and to think that the person skipped out on this kid and he was dying. It was really heartbreaking to think about it, but I felt so good to be a part of that, to have my number called, to step up and be there for a kid that's dying. It was an unbelievable experience. It was one that makes me feel happy to have been a pro basketball player, to be put in a position to where I could have done that.
We're talking to Tracy Murray, NBA champion, NBA star, plus also UCLA superstar. And Tracy, that's a great story, and I'm glad you're bringing that up, especially on the show, because that's one reason why I have this show, is for to talk about foundational work, talk about your career, but in more of an aspects of, you know, how you did this instead of what your accomplishments are. We all know what your accomplishments on the court were, but the hard work that you had to put in, so kids understand that, but also understanding things like doing great things like you did to help that child, to give them a great experience, is what life's about. And for, you know, kids listening right now or high school players, college going to college saying, I want to be like Tracy Murray. Well, the thing is that there's much more to that responsibility than that. And just the money, the fame, the accolades, it's about paying it forward. And you definitely, I want to talk a little bit about that later on, for sure. Now let's kind of go into specifically UCLA. So you kind of said that was your dream. Were you the kind of player that was that every time, even when you started to play basketball, you were one of the best on the floor?
Well, I had a natural talent, but of course talent has to be developed. I wasn't blessed with the best athleticism. I had big feet. I was a heavy kid. So I had to work on a lot of stuff. I had the natural born ability to score the basketball or to shoot the basketball. Plus, I did put in my extra time as a youngster to make that ball go through the net as many times as it did. But, you know, and it helps that my dad played basketball. My family played basketball. I was around it all the time. I lived in the gym as a kid. I was pushed to the gym in a stroller. So it was, it just rubbed off on me real naturally. But to go to start off at the YMCAs and the Boys and Girls Clubs or pickup games at the local gym, and then to get the basic fundamentals at a Michael Cooper's fundamental, the King D basketball camp was all about fundamentals. It wasn't, Michael Cooper was there every day. This was during the showtime of the height of his career. In the summertime, he had a basketball camp in our hometown of Pasadena, California. And that's where we learned hard work. That's where we learned the fundamentals of basketball. You know, the Pasadena Bulldog basketball camp, which was the high school basketball camp ran by Coach Turgeon, him and Coach Dewey, those were the local coaches at the time that they taught Michael Cooper. Michael Cooper passed it down to us. He paid it forward to us. So that enabled me to have fast forward into my career. I had 15 years of basketball camps to teach kids the correct way of playing basketball. If you don't have the foundation, there's no way you can reach that pinnacle. So between the hard work as a youngster, learning the fundamentals, putting in the extra work because I wasn't given some gifts that it seems like tons of people have nowadays. Yes. It seems like everybody can run and jump and put their head on the rim. And, you know, but I had to work at that. So, you know, basketball in some sense was easy. And in the other sense, I really had to work at it, the athletic part of it. So, the best thing that happened to me was I had surgery when I was 14 years old. I had a bone that was slipping out of the socket in my hip, and they said I had grown too fast. Plus, I had a weak core, so my hips were between growing from 5'10 to 6'4 in 3 months and having a weak core, my hips were doing haywire tricks, you know, and things were growing deformed. So missing that whole year, after 3 or 4 doctors telling me I'll never play again, and then one doctor telling me, you know what, we're going to fix you up and you're going to be fine. Dr. Stanford Noel, I'll never forget him. You know, he fixed me up. He put me back out there. And I was hungrier than ever. You know, sometimes when you're talented and you're one of the better players on the court when you're growing up, you lose your hunger. And then you have all of these child prodigies that don't go where they should go. It made me hungry. And, you know, just sitting there watching people play, watching people pass me up while I'm sitting for a whole year trying to get right. It was frustrating, but it was motivating. I spent a lot of time in the gym by myself when I was able, when I got cleared to start working out. I worked extremely hard to get back. Definitely. And the next 3 years of high school were dream years, and I was able to go to UCLA. I grew up watching UCLA on local Channel 5 station. And you know, I used to watch them a lot. So, you know, knowing the legacy of Coach Wooden and a lot of the players that have come through there, you know, of course, growing up in L.A., you wanted to go to UCLA.
Yes, yes. And that tradition always still continues at UCLA, for sure, in ways in that the program will always go into certain cycles, but it's just like Notre Dame football. We got to have a good basketball team, just like you have a great Notre Dame football team to keep the boosters happy, for sure, when you're talking about John Wooden and things like that. So, Tracy, you were you highly recruited to go to UCLA?
Yes, I was. Arizona was the first one to send me a letter in eighth grade, but after that, it was, you know, UCLA. The more and more I kept playing from my sophomore year, I averaged 28 a game, 31 as a junior, 44 as a senior. So wow. The recruitment, the recruiting process was I've been recruited by everybody. Being a McDonald's All-American helped.
Yes.
You know, I had my choice of where I wanted to go, and that's a blessing. You know, it's a blessing, you know, to be able to recover from that devastating injury and then to be able to be an All-American in 3 years after that and then go to the school of wherever you wanted to go, your choice. And it was a lot of hard work, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and you know, a lot of praying, you know, just staying healthy. And as I say again, it's almost like a storybook. It was a blessing.
So you get there to UCLA. Who was the coach then? Remind me. I have to go back. I mean, you did well at UCLA going to the Elite Eight, but who was the coach when you were recruited to go to UCLA?
Well, Coach Herrick, Jim Herrick was my coach. What's so funny about that situation is I was being recruited by Walt Hazard, and then they let him go, and then Coach Herrick came in towards the end of my recruiting. And, you know, it's almost like the recruiting process had to start all over again with UCLA. I love the school. I love the atmosphere going to the games and everything. But when you have a new coach, you have to figure out, you know, what the plan is for you as an individual. And you know, who is he, you know, adding to the team before you get there? You know, that's another thing that's going to attract you to come there. Who is he recruiting in your recruiting class that you're going to possibly be playing with? You know, so all of this, you know, had to make sense when the coaching change happened. And they went and they got Derek Martin and Don McLean, who were McDonald's All-Americans the year before, 1988, before me. And then they signed Mitchell Butler, who was a longtime AAU teammate of mine. He was a McDonald's All-American in my class, played 9 years in the NBA. When they signed him and Van Mason, who was a huge high school star in the L.A. area, and it just made sense to go there. It looked like they were starting to bring the glory days back. They were signing top talent, and it was like, okay, this is UNLV was attractive. You know, they won the championship in 91, but I heard that they were going on probation, so that kind of took them out of the running. I was really attracted to Louisville because Coach Crum is a disciple of Coach Wooden, and he has a solid program. They've won national championships. They were Purvis Ellison at the time. Allen Houston, who was my cousin, had signed there at the time. Coach Houston, who, you know, Allen's dad, he was there. But Coach Houston took the job at Tennessee, and Allen went with him. So
right. That
kind of eliminated Louisville. My other two that were in the top five was Villanova, which is if I wanted to go to the Big East, I really love Rolly Massimino. He was a great coach, a good motivator, a fun guy, great recruiter. The other one was New Mexico. At the time, you know, that was like the long shot. Okay, this is like a school that I feel that if they'll just go there and just let me do whatever I wanted to do. They had Luke Longley at the time. That was an attractive piece. You know, when you have a dominating center that can be double-teamed, that opens things up for me, of course. So that was attractive. But UCLA, the tradition, being at home, your hometown fans, your family, everybody gets to come to the game that, you know, that grew up watching you. That was more attractive than anything. And of course, you know, UCLA is known for not only for their basketball, but for their academics. They're also known for, you know, the I call it the triple threat: the social, the athletics, and the academics. You know, everything was right there, and so it was the best school for me to go to.
Well, you talk about L.A., and it's interesting you never played for the Lakers because, again, you definitely had that L.A. experience playing at UCLA. And so you had a great career at UCLA, to say the least, for sure. And am I right when I was looking at things, you came out early, right? You didn't finish?
Yes, I came out a year early. It was a situation where I played on the 91 Pan American team and got a bronze medal. And I guess the only reason why we lost, Jimmy Jackson got a stress fracture, and he was carrying us at the time, and he was playing so well. And I thought when we lost him, we pretty much lost the gold medal.
Right.
So that was I played well. I was coming off of a high playing that summer in Havana, Cuba, for representing my country. I came into the season and played extremely well, two seasons of averaging 21 a game. Led the nation in three-point field goals. I just felt like the dream team was coming in. My Olympic hopes were shattered. The team that went to the Elite Eight, we were loaded. We had 10 pros on the team, and I felt like that team right there was going to be the team that went the furthest. I didn't think we were going to get to the national championship with the team afterwards. No disrespect to those guys because they're great players, but I just thought that was our best team. That was our best shot. And they kept saying, end of the lottery, mid-first round for me. So I was like, let me just go ahead and take the plunge and jump in the draft.
So you jump in the draft. Where did you get? I understand you got traded right after getting drafted by one team. So, but what pick were you?
Yeah, I learned the business side real quick.
Yeah,
it was the most stressful thing I went through in my life, and I've been through a lot of stress just with the injuries and stuff like that. I don't want to ever go through another draft again, trust me. I ended up, they told me between 10 and 20, but the teams that were in the 9, 10, and 11 areas that I worked out for, they were impressed. So I thought I was going in that area.
Right.
And to, especially number 11 in Houston, I really thought I was a shoo-in to be. I had my best workout, and I shot that ball every which way they wanted me to shoot it. Left-handed, right-handed, showed them a little bit of athleticism that they didn't think I had. And, you know, showed them I could handle the ball a little bit. My workout was good. I was really surprised when they took Robert Horry. Now, fast forward, Robert Horry turned out to be one of the best clutch players in the history of the game. He's a winner, you know, and I understand it now. Being older, you know, this guy was 6'10", he sacrifices, he's extremely long and athletic, he blocks shots, he rebounds, he hits big shots. He was always the guy that, he was a perfect role player to play with Hakeem Olajuwon and to play with Clyde Drexler. You know, well, me and Drexler came in at the same time, but that first championship, you know, you had Otis Thorpe, you had Hakeem Olajuwon, you know, it was a perfect player to fit in the three spot that was going to, you know, kind of do the glue stuff,
right,
the dirty work and be the glue guy, be the unselfish guy. You didn't need another guy putting up shots. So I fell down to 18. I got drafted by a team that I didn't even work out for, which was San Antonio. And going over the rosters and before my little before my interview, after taking a picture with Commissioner Stern, you know, I'm being walked to the seat with the roster in my hand, and I'm just envisioning myself playing with David Robinson and Sean Elliott, right, and Avery Johnson, all these guys, and all of a sudden they told me, don't get too comfortable with the hat. That, you know, there was a trade. I'm like, whoa, you know, why are you giving me the roster? This is what I'm thinking, you know. So I'm sitting there talking about a team that I'm not going to even be a part of. And it was kind of frustrating. And then to be shipped to Milwaukee and then to Portland after
that. Okay, that's up for a second. Milwaukee. I'm sure, being an L.A. guy, I'm going to Milwaukee. That's one of our that's one of our radio stations. I had to bring that up. That's one of our stations we're on. It's in Milwaukee. That's got to be, oh, my gosh.
Well, I was also thinking, I'm going from a playoff team,
yes,
to a non-playoff team, but then I end up getting shipped back to a playoff team, which, you know, the Portland Trail Blazers, they were loaded. They were so loaded. They were just coming off of the finals with against the Bulls. So I'm coming to a team that just came out of the finals, so there was no way I was going to play in my first couple of years.
Right, and so that's got to frustrate you as in high school 40-point scorer to another a prolific scorer at UCLA, and thinking you're going to a team where you're going to get this opportunity. And this is, again, the politics of basketball, which we talked off air. You go to a team that you're a star, you might end up being one of the big, big stars. Think of specifically, what is his name? That just went to Cleveland, that got traded, that was a UCLA guy. That basically,
right, Kevin Love.
Yeah, Kevin Love. Just think if you were in that kind of position as Kevin Love was in. Now, if Love, right, would have went to a team that was a really top team, he might not see the floor. Now he is a, right, big, big-time scorer. Bam, he's in Cleveland now. You know,
right, and plus he was thrown into the fire where he can make his mistakes and play through his mistakes and feel comfortable and confident on the floor. Now, when you're playing with a veteran team and you're barely playing and then they throw you in there and you make one mistake and they pull you out, it's not the same feeling. You don't get that feeling of being comfortable out on the floor. So you're not playing your game. You're playing constantly looking over your shoulder, and that's the way I felt the first 3 years of my career.
But at Portland, one of the things you were, you led three-point percentage. So you were a great three-point shooter. So when you got your opportunity, you were doing well, but just not enough time.
Right, right. Well, at that time, you know, Clyde Drexler had gotten hurt, and then Jerome Kersey had gotten hurt. So it freed up a little time that year to where I can be on the floor and not look over my shoulder as much. And I was able to shoot the ball pretty well that year.
So you jump from the Portland Trail Blazers, get traded to the Rockets, which is hilarious, but only for a short period of time, and you got to at least win an NBA championship. So I guess even though you were just a role player again in that situation, to have, I guess, to call yourself an NBA champion, not a lot of people get to do that. So at least you got that was a little icing on the cake before your travels next, where you probably had your best part of your NBA career. But going to Houston and going from Portland, which is another top West team, to Houston. Tell us about, you know, once you heard you were traded again, it seems like you're starting to get things going in Portland, and then you're gone again.
Well, it's funny because the day of the trade, I'm walking out in my uniform, my Portland uniform in Dallas, and I always get to the arena like 3 hours early so I can get shots up and a workout. Try to stay as sharp as I can because it's tough to stay in shape when you're not playing. They have a thing where you have to condition before and after the game, before or after the game, for 20 minutes if you don't get 20 minutes on the floor. But being on machines is not the same. So you have to get out there on the floor and do some running, do some jumping, shoot your shots, make sure that you stay in some type of rhythm. So I get there early, and I'm about to start shooting, and then there's a guy that's working at Reunion Arena at the time. This is before Dallas moved into the big arena that they're in now. And he goes, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "What are you talking about? I'm about to get some shots up." He goes, "You haven't heard? You've been traded." I'm like, "I've been traded." So I call Clyde because the guy told me what the trade was. I called Clyde. Clyde's like, where you at, Joker? I'm on the plane. Wait, we're waiting on you. So I immediately run back, get undressed, take a cab to the airport, barely make the flight. And then the next thing you see is us walking through the tunnel, waving at the crowd. That infamous moment where you know, Clyde is the home guy being brought home, and the reunion of Five Slammer Jammer with him and Akeem Olajuwon. That was an exciting time to see those two guys. They were acting like two little kids, man. It was almost like their college days had started over again. You see them laughing and giggling and stuff, and it was quite a time. I really enjoyed that team the half a year I was with them. It was a great bunch of guys. The chemistry was right. Everybody on that team was unselfish. And to not get re-signed, I mean, the way the situation went down with Houston, I was left puzzled with the situation of what's going on, what really happened, because I was told that they protected me during the expansion draft. So that means hands off for Tracy Murray, while Vancouver and Toronto make their choices of who they want to put on their teams. So as soon as the expansion draft is over, now I'm told they're not going to re-sign me. So I'm like, you know, I'm sitting there like, what did I do to deserve this? You know, I could have at least gone to Toronto and been on their salary cap and played over there initially, you know, instead of being protected. And then it's almost like my career was almost killed.
Right.
Because I was an unproven player. We just come off of a high winning the championship. So why would you do that to one of your players or do that to somebody that's part of your championship team? You know, it's just, to me, it was just, it was baffling to me. So, you know, I was sitting at home during training camp the next year. Nobody was knocking on my door. And this is fresh off of a championship. I led the league in threes the year before, but I still wasn't proven as a player night in, night out. So, I was thinking that I might have to go overseas, and you know, back then, if you go overseas, you don't come back.
That's that, and then we talked about that story off air with Dennis Hopson and his situation, and also Marcus Liberty, same type of
right.
deal. These are two awesome college basketball players that had the ability in the pros, but wrong team. And I think that's advice to tell young people. I want to ask that question right quick before we go into the more of your story, is telling these young people that go into the lottery or leave early that they better have a good situation before they go and do this, or when they're going to really look at hiring the right agent to get to the right team, especially because if you go to the wrong team, your career, you can make some money, but your career of ever accomplishing what you want to do might never happen.
Right. Now, that's where I think I made my mistake at. You know, I should have went with the agent that my college coach told me to go with, which I ended up going with him later on, which was Arne Tellem. I went with him later on after my first 3 years. But, you know, this situation, I was sitting at home. I was bugging my agent. He got to the point where he wouldn't call me back. And I kept inquiring about Toronto because Isaiah Thomas and I, we're pretty good friends. You know, we've had some brief conversations just about when I was in Portland, just about coming to Detroit because I wasn't being used in Portland. He's like, man, I know you can play. I've seen you play, you know. So we've had, you know, conversations, and I've always looked up to Isaiah Thomas. And so I told my agent, look, give me Isaiah Thomas' number because I want to know the truth about what's going on. At the time, I was really questioning my agent. I didn't trust him because he was telling me he's trying to get more money out of Toronto. It's like, to me, it wasn't about the money. It was about being on a team, getting in the training camp, and establishing myself as a pro. So I called Isaiah myself, and he was always really honest with me. He was like, T, I would love to give you more money, but we're operating on a half of a salary cap. We can't give you no more than minimum. And I was like, okay, send the plane ticket. I'm coming. And so that's how I ended up staying in the league. Otherwise, Tracy Murray was done after 3 years, and you would never have heard of him again.
Wow.
And he told me, he said, look, we may not have money, but we have opportunity, we have shots, and we have minutes. You come in here and you take you a spot.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, and Pinterest, Neil Haley. And it's interesting having a weekly segment with Darnell, really two segments. So we're going to kind of break it down in two different directions. First, the education piece of it. And so I want to welcome the program, former NFL star, Pitt star, and also Super Bowl champion Darnell Dinkins. Darnell, how are you?
How's it going, Neil? How you doing, man?
Good. I know. I understand you're on the road doing a lot of talks in Maryland. So it's great for you to take the time to be on the show today. How are you? Good.
Man, I'm thankful to be on the show once again. You know, thank you for all the insight and I love just me and you getting together and doing a rundown on recruiting. High schools or Pitt games, but yeah, we're in Maryland right now. We speak at Overly High School tonight. Last night we had a great turnout at the Playless High School in the Playless, Maryland, and there was over 150 parents there. Got a lot of information about the recruiting process and what they can do to help their kid get into high school. Get into college.
Yeah, definitely. And I talk to all these parents all the time, and it was interesting. I had a very interesting friend of mine on the show last night. We were talking education about she prepares kids for college academically and for the admissions process. And she talks about how parents are they're waiting too late. They're waiting to that 11th, 12th
Absolutely.
Grade year. And you can speak about that for sure, right?
Absolutely. You know, what we do is we go in and we talk about a game plan for college. And a lot of parents, and me and my wife, we go around and see so many parents doing baseball, doing football, doing basketball, doing volleyball, everything athletic to get their child into school. And they don't understand it starts day one, the second they get into ninth grade. More importantly, eighth grade year, preparing for the ninth grade year. Now a lot of courses will carry over into your ninth grade year. But they need to understand when a college coach is looking at you for going to school there, they're going to look at that transcript that starts ninth grade year. And everything that you need to do, you need to build up to that senior year. Now, if you're just now getting to your junior year or you're a senior, if you haven't received a letter yet from a school, chances are you need to hit the panic button because no school really knows about you. So the first important piece of this game plan that we go and talk about is having those 16 core credits. And those 16 core credits is what the schools are going to base, the NCAA is going to base upon if you're eligible to even play college sports. And that starts with 4 years of English, 3 years of math, algebra one or higher, 2 years of social studies, 2 years of natural physical science, 1 year in additional English or math, and 4 years of foreign language, all total 16. And that's the first stepping stone into getting into college in sports.
So when you're thinking about those courses, why do certain players, especially, when they definitely have that academic and also athletic piece, miss out in that and not take the right courses because they're not really thinking about that?
Finding, you got to go to www.eligibilitycenter.org. Once again, that's www.eligibilitycenter.org. With that, whatever school you're in, you get to attain the six-digit code from the counselors. When the counselors can really verify what your child is doing, most of the time in these schools, you have over 1,000 to 1,500 kids and only four counselors. So that ratio is going to be somewhere between 300 to 400 students to counselors. So you got to make sure that you understand that. So you get that six-digit code. Obtain that six-digit code. Now you go to eligibilitycenter.org. You see the courses that are registered at that school. So you're at North Hills, North Allegheny, Taylor. You can see your school right there and what courses are accepted. A lot of times, it's all about how our course is worded, the lettering of it, and everything. So if a course is not worded the right way, it may not even be accepted. And there's been, as I'm speaking to you now, Neil, there's been six schools that have contacted us about issues that with kids that if they had graduated, they would not have had enough core credits. And there's a school in particular that a kid went to school, lost his scholarship because he only ended up 15 core credits, and you need 16. So this is an epidemic that's going on all over the country, and all we do is come in and really help guidance counselors, coaches, ADs, and more importantly, parents and students set that game plan to get into school.
We're talking to Darnell Dinkins, Super Bowl champion, about the college process, preparing for college, and it's very interesting we said about those core courses. And are you seeing a mixture of kids, and a lot of times with counselors, that even if kids that are taking high-level courses, they might forget and take and not take another year of a certain subject in that, and then they fail based on that reason? It's not really that they're not trying to make those mistakes. It just happens?
Sometimes that happens. Sometimes the fact that they fail a course and don't even realize that they got no credit for it. And now if you fail a course early and you don't apply it or attach it to your and retake it, it's not going to count towards your overall GPA. And that GPA right now stands, you need a 2.0 GPA to be eligible for college, okay? And with that 2.0, you need to have a 1010 on the SAT. Now, starting August 1st, 2016, the GPA requirement is going to go from a 2.0 to a 2.3 minimum requirement GPA, and now you're going to score 1080 on SAT. Now, mind you, that GPA is only your core classes. So if you got electives on it like gym, if you got home ec, if you got wood shop, those are great courses to take, not going to count towards you getting into college. So that core GPA is what those schools are basing on. And with the SAT, it's only the two-part score, not the three-part score. So you got the reading and math component. The written part is not included in the overall score for college. So when parents are just looking at their son and their daughter's stuff, they need to make sure it starts from ninth grade year. Me being a top player coming out of Western PA, I had three gym classes my senior year, and the only cool thing about it was there was one gym class, it was 40 girls and just me. So that was about the only cool thing about it. But after that, you know, I had to really, it was embarrassing when schools came through and started saying that, you know what, we really like you, Darnell, but unless you change some of your electives, you will not be able to play at our school. And that's what's happening to a lot of kids right now. And the more prepared they are, I say all the time when I speak, the more proactive you are, the less reactive you have to be.
It's definitely true. And think about a lot of times, because they put so much time into the athletics, that academics are important for basically looking at the GPA, and then they forget certain things. Or I worked with two kids that played at Penn Hills, and what they were two pretty good standouts. One plays at Toledo right now. I won't say who it specifically is, but I mean, that's giving a little bit of a hint. But
yeah, right.
But he wouldn't mind. No, I mean, basically, he was fooling around a bit his freshman year. And he had to scramble at the end. And and a lot of these kids, they come from middle school where they basically can do no wrong, get to high school and fail a couple courses or do poorly GPA-wise, and then they scramble throughout. So one of the things I wanted to bring up as the educator portion of this show in a lot of ways is you're definitely a parent educator and athletic educator in so many ways as well, that the mistake they're making, and this is a huge mistake they're making, is that parents got to get these kids on board in middle school. They don't want to get them on board. They don't want to get them on board when they're a sophomore, junior. That hey, you know what?
Not.
Because now there's such a competition to get that scholarship, that Division I scholarship. You cannot have anything that's looking bad on your resume. So really look at importance of finding that tutor or finding somebody else to keep your grades up. Because even though you might not like academically what you're being in the classroom is a key component once you move on.
Absolutely it is. And when kids, like I said, it's not about athletics. Athletics do not override academics. And a lot of kids feel, well, I scored three touchdowns last game. I had 30-something points. Now I'm set to go. That's not the case. You need to set a very, very good academic game plan starting that ninth grade year. Just making sure you're in the right courses. There's kids who've been taking college prep courses that they encountered the overall NCAA requirements and wasn't counting towards their core credits. So when kids understand that, when parents understand it, more importantly, don't put all your hopes in the school, the AD, the coaches, the guidance counselors. Take part. And what I give is I give parents power by saying, go attain the six-digit code. Now when your kid is in those courses, you can see exactly what courses are taken. Now the key thing about those 16 core credits, 10 of those core credits need to be locked in by the beginning of seventh semester, which is the beginning of your child's senior year. And it's very hard to change courses that are locked in now. They're locked in with the NCAA, and now that's when they start looking at that GPA and seeing what they're going to score on that SAT or ACT. So it's very important that before those courses get locked in at the beginning of the semester, you're talking and meeting with the counselor. So it was very important to start ninth grade year or even earlier, eighth grade year, transition into ninth grade, because that can only help you. And 10 of those core courses need to be, 7 of them need to be in either English, math, or a science. So it's real descriptive as far as what you need if you're being proactive. If you're just planning by ear and thinking that the athletic side of things is going to help, a lot, you'll find out, like a lot of other parents have, you'll be sadly mistaken when a school has to call you, happen to a kid at a D1 school, saying that I am not eligible for college.
We're talking to Darnell Dinkins, former NFL and NCAA college football star, on the Total Celebrity Show, and we're talking academics, so it really it's the Total Tutor Show in so many aspects as well. Now, thinking about this process, now, I think especially with you being in this area, in the Western Pennsylvania area, you're really helping lots of coaches right now, lots of players. But one of my big concerns is you're not out in all 50 states. And as I know in education, things are very completely based on standards, based on specific expectations in those states. So people listening across the country, they need to go check out that one website Darnell talked about and also ask Darnell to come speak at your school, because
Absolutely. Because
the biggest problem is that a lot of times the standards are different and the expectations, I'm sure you're seeing schools in Florida or Texas at sometimes that are not really meeting those standards, and those kids have the big shot of getting to the big schools and they fail because they've not taken the right courses.
Exactly. And, Neil, one thing I'm going to try to do, I just contacted Deion Sanders today, and he has a school down in Texas, and we're going to try to touch base and do a speaking there and at the same time have him on our show, which will be great. But more importantly, anybody who's listening, it's just not a PA thing, Ohio thing, a Maryland thing. It's happening all over the country. If anybody needs me to come there, all they need to do is go to email me at ddinkins@dynamitesports.com, or go to dynamitesports.com and fill out the free seminar request form. And with that, I will come there. I'll help them, you know, get on track. We have a college calculator right on there. I do so many speaking gigs in South Carolina for 3 days, spoke to over 30-something schools, and I asked a group of kids what their GPA is. Some kids don't even know their GPA going through their junior and senior year, which if your favorite – I ask kids, if your favorite school was sitting across Florida State, Clemson, Michigan State, Ohio State, and a coach from that school asked you, what's your GPA, and you didn't know, how do you think he would look at you as a player if you don't even know your own GPA? So these are the things that are going on all over this country, and I just love to come out and really help support in every effort, in every way that I can, and get these kids and parents to set realistic goals. That's what this is all about. Now, what you do when the tutor is sad, what I do on the education piece, is helping kids understand it's going to take more than just doing the basics to get into school, whether it's athletics or just a regular student. You're going to have to do good grades. You're going to have to take the SAT or ACT. So the more proactive you are and prepare for it, the less reactive you'll have to be coming your senior year, standing there saying, what am I going to do with school? Because I have not set a plan in place.
That's so true. And also, Darnell, I think that based on everyone wanting to be a student athlete in college, more and more universities are not giving out a lot of those basket weaving courses anymore. And academics are becoming more and more a challenge because, again, kids are seeing, and especially people like yourself saying, you got to have the education because there will be life after football. There will be life after basketball. There will be life after baseball. So you have to be student first, then athlete. But good talking to you, Darnell.
Absolutely.
We will touch base next week involving the academic piece, and we'll talk soon. All right. Take care, man. All right.
Thank you.
All right. See you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.